I'm going to tell you a few stories. All we have to do is listen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another movie podcast. With me today is...
Ralph.
And I am Oscar, I forgot to say that. This is episode number 84, Babysitting a Toddler. And then behind number two is another toddler playing Overwatch.
I'm not a toddler.
No, I know you're not a toddler. Anyway, what we typically do and what we will be doing today is reviewing three new/newish films, at least films from this year. And those three movies are going to be Ready or Not.
Here I Come.
I knew you were going to say something. Where'd You Go, Bernadette? And conclude with The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Which is a wordy title, but it's true.
Very wordy.
You can also find everything we do, every episode we've ever done, over at our website, which is otherpodcast.com. And there you can find, like I said, all of our other 83 shows we've done, all of our bonus episodes, which there's an update about that. Get to it in a second. You also can find on our website our top 10 stuff for the years. Top 10 movies. Actually, we've done also TV shows of the year and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Our marathons as well, which we finished one recently. It's all up there right now, all cataloged. Nice and neat for everyone to enjoy at their leisure. The bonus update I was going to say is that this technically comes out September, and we're taking a break from bonuses. Actually, I've been thinking of... Since we didn't get any donations for these last four bonuses coming up right now,
mm-hmm.
August, September, October, November, so five, December, I'm just gonna push them all into 1 month kind of thing and just put them all at once because they're already done. You know, I could just put them out whenever, and we're not including any new bonuses. We're gonna restart that at the end of the year. We're gonna restructure a bit how we want to. Put out for bonuses or what kind of extra content we can come up with that's more creative instead of just another new one, you know, that I just randomly pick. So, and also I realize that bonus is kind of hard for us to do sometimes because it's another trip to the theater, to, you know, technically to add to it. So I just want to make our lives a little easier off. But I think you and I should brainstorm us too. I have some ideas,
okay.
But like something to add. So what's
we can talk about
the next bonus going to look like.
We can talk about it for sure.
Or maybe like change a yearly, like, I don't know, maybe like in some sort of extended marathon. And just bonus version.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
It could be that kind of thing. Right. That could be fun. Anyway, so that's what we're going to be doing. Or I should say, not be doing. So there'll be no bonus for September, no new one. But check out our website at our calendar page. You'll see what the other remaining bonuses are going to come out that we did 5 months ago. 5 months ago and more. And those, you see what you'll be expecting down the pike on your regular feed. Now, now that's done. And sorry, my voice... I was recently sick, and this is just my voice from that.
Yep.
Anyway, so we're going to talk about recent discoveries, which is a thing we do where we talk about the movies we've been watching independently from each other in between these shows. We each have three, and one that we both saw together. So you have some kid stuff you watched.
Sadly, I saw Dora and the Lost City of Gold. That was a Dora movie.
Not good.
I mean, there's nothing great, if that's what you're wondering.
Not like surprisingly, oh, look at that adventure story is good.
I mean, it was okay. It was funny at some points.
Okay.
But they introduced, like, characters. It's like they wanted the best of both worlds. They wanted the live action, but they wanted to keep the animation people, the animated characters there as well. Because there's a monkey and a cat, or and a fox, I'm sorry.
And they're animated?
Completely. Well, the monkey doesn't look as animated as the fox does.
Oh.
The fox is very clearly animated.
You don't mean like Lion King realistic looking. You mean
no, I mean like
animated.
Animated.
Okay,
animated,
got it.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Right. So that was kind of off-putting, but it was, I mean, I get it at the same time. The movie just totally played it off. You know what's funny is that the only good thing about I like this movie is that the movie just played off a lot of things that I feel other movies would have taken a lot more seriously for no reason. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they could have taken a page out of their book and going like, oh yeah, just, you know, just go ahead and just go with it. Let it go, you know?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, other than that, it was about friendship and the regular stuff. There was one really cool scene that was, they get hallucinogenics happen in the jungle. Like
shrooms?
And then the whole, yeah, the whole part, no, not shrooms, it's like a spore or something happens to them.
Okay.
And the whole movie switches to the animated version of Dora the Explorer, which was pretty cool.
Oh, okay. Nice little, like,
yeah, that was cool. Exactly, yeah. Other than that, I mean, yeah, it's not that good.
My understanding of that movie is that, based on the trailer, I've seen it a couple times. That it takes place after the events of the cartoon, right?
Like, yeah, older, like, right? Diego's older, she's older. Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. But she's not. She's still like herself because she's never dealt with anybody else. She's, you know, her whole life has been in the jungle by herself and stuff like that. You know, with her parents, there's nobody else.
She's like, she has a life of Lindsay Lohan's character in Mean Girls before she goes to American high school.
Yeah,
she lived in Africa.
Right, right, right.
She never had to like ask to go to the bathroom before.
Right,
she doesn't know. Right.
Exactly.
Dora is Lindsay Lohan. All right. What's another one?
The other movie that I saw that's might as well stay to kids movies is The Angry Birds 2, Frenemies or whatever that's called.
Oh, there's a
it's called Angry Birds 2 movie.
Two-part title.
But I think it's called the bottom tag on the movie says Frenemies. So the birds and the pigs join together to go against the eagles that are attacking us, another island that's shooting ice and wants to take over and blah blah blah. So they basically join together to go take out, and it's more like about, I guess, they explore more the character of Red, who was the hero, and now he doesn't know if he wants to, like, he doesn't know how to live without being a hero. He needs the attention. He's never had it before. Now he, like, strives for it. Always needs to be the hero.
Okay.
So now he's, like, trying to let go.
The first one. Did you see
The first one. He's so mad because everyone picked on him. He's been different. That's why he's always mad. That's why he's, like,
Red?
The angry bird. Yeah, Red. That's what his name is. Yeah. The main bird. And in this one, he's not as mad anymore. He still does get mad, but just not as mad, obviously. Anyways, and he finds relationships and blah, 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 blah. That was funnier. Overall, still had fun. Fell asleep through like 10 minutes of the movie. But yeah, other than that, I mean,
you know, that's technically a movie based off a video game.
It is.
Should it be in contention as to see which, is it in the good half of movies based on video games?
I'm never going to rewatch this movie again.
Okay.
Like, I'll rewatch like a Pokemon movie before I rewatch this.
Yeah, the original movie. We saw that a couple times.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But we were kids, though, so.
But yeah, other than that, I mean, the gang's all back from the original one.
Cool.
And they add more characters, which is cool. They had they knew that the little kid versions of them were cute and cool to watch, so they added, like, their own little scene or their own little, like, voyage for the kids, the kid birds, for them to do something, was cool. But other than that, I mean, yeah, that was funner than Dora, if you want to compare.
Okay.
But still, kids movie. I still fell asleep, so yeah.
I hear you. And there's another kids movie that isn't for kids, and that's Good Boys, which is what you and I saw.
Right, right.
Unless you have another title. You said
I actually did have one more.
Oh, you didn't tell me that.
No, I know. Oh. I just remembered right now.
Dude, come on, that was a great segue.
It was really amazing, and I know that, but I'm just going to quickly say this one. I saw the 20th anniversary version of The Matrix.
Oh, yeah, I didn't
see it. I just saw that, and it was in Dolby, and it was nicely done and nicely put. And apparently our friend of ours, another co-host that we had, Luke, he's never seen The Matrix, apparently. And I called bullshit the whole movie, and I was quoting most of the movie, because it's one of my favorite movies to watch.
He's lying. He's seen the movie.
I know he's. Like, he must have not remembered, or he must have not.
I don't know why he's...
He's just being a D-bag. Anyways, it was great. It was a great watch. It was a great view.
Why is he a gaslighter?
Everything looked still good. Obviously, there was some restrictions. And then,
you mean because of the transfer?
Yeah, the transfer. Yeah, yeah. Okay. But other than that, like, yeah, it was a good quality. I still really liked it. I actually appreciate it a lot more now than I did because I hadn't seen it in maybe like over 5-6 years. Watching it again.
That's a yearly movie.
Is it a yearly movie for you?
Like an annual movie.
No.
Not like on a schedule.
I see the other two movies more on TV than I do on this one.
Oh.
But yeah.
I watch TV, I guess, as much as
I know you don't.
I'll even watch the other two. I know they're subpar, right? But they're like, they're still very fun to watch.
Like, I left the movie theater to go get more of something to drink, And I waited for the right time. I knew when to go.
Yeah.
It was like right when they were about to meet the Oracle, and I was like, ah, let me go because I want to see the Oracle.
That's a good, yeah, okay.
But I wanted to see her because, you know, I was like, it's a different actress after that. So, so
yeah. Yeah, the actress died.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, I kind of, it's still in theaters, right?
Yeah, I think it's still in theaters.
They're going to have it for a while. Maybe I'll, maybe if I find a showing, I'll catch up to it. But these days, I've been working a little extra more, so I don't have time. I bet I had time to watch all three movies.
Welcome to my life.
For this.
I'm about to have a little bit more time now, so I'm actually going back to 2 days off instead of one. So,
so we're probably going to even out then, you and I.
Probably.
Cool. So now do you have you don't have another one?
No.
Well, speaking of The Matrix, the simulation of growing up in a... See, it sucks. That segue doesn't work, does it?
Mm-hmm. Right. Anyways, Good Boys.
Good Boys. What did you think?
I had fun with it. I did have fun watching the movie. I thought it was funny. I thought it was I was a good view and everything. I just felt like some of the stuff felt forced, and I feel like people... Like, I feel like I was already, like, it wasn't as funny to me as it felt for my audience. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were laughing at certain parts, and they were like, oh, this is really funny. And I was like, nah, it's not that funny. And I was just like, for me, maybe I'm not trying to be a snob or anything, but I was just like, yeah, it's funny. It's just not as funny as you're making it sound. Overall, I did have fun with it. I found it more like, oh, these kids are fucking retarded, because I'm like, part of my use of the word, but I was like, it's just, they're dumb. They don't know any better. And it's like, I mean, my favorite part is just like how confident they were, because they're like, now we're sixth graders, guys. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Your confidence level is maximum. Yeah. Like,
in the trailer, they show the, because they show a lot of the jokes, right? And one of the, in the trailer, they show how they cross the highway.
Yeah.
And that's the only time I actually felt the stakes of the whole movie. Because they actually could have gotten killed. I mean, I know it's a movie, yeah, and they're not going to get killed.
Well, yeah,
but Jesus Christ, these dumbass fucking kids. Right. Are crossing a highway.
Well, it's funny is that they were like, I've never ridden a bike over a mile or over like two blocks of whatever we lived.
Right.
Yeah.
But so. I remember feeling that that's the only time I actually felt for the characters. Or at least, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that I didn't feel for their plot of getting the drone and all this shit at all. I didn't care, you know, which is not a good testament of the movie. I know they cared. And to them and to a little boy, see, this movie both gets everything right. But also, it doesn't get it right all the way.
You know what it reminds
me? Or something.
It reminds me of the Hot Tub Time Machine feeling. I like the movie.
I haven't seen
it. I found it funny. It was good laugh and everything.
Yeah.
It's just, it's there. It's nothing, there's nothing extra. The movie, there's everything to the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a big expiration there. As soon as you open that can of Good Boys, it expires in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Like, and after that, like, the whatever novelty of the movie wears off pretty fast.
Right.
So, like, you know, if I watched it today, maybe I'd be boasting more about it. But, like, it just went down. You know? Good Boys has a very fleeting high of entertainment value. I mean.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's... I don't know, neither here nor there. Maybe it's a negative more than a positive, but it was a fun set though. So it's not like I regret watching it. So that's Good Boys, and now we transition to some of the movies I've watched, and they are children's movies too. Actually, I got one here called The Wedding Guest, which I'm positive
what's that
you have not heard of or seen. This stars Dev Patel as a badass in a movie. Mm. Which is so hard to, you know, see. You don't see him as a bad... You know, Slumdog Millionaire, right? This is a story centered on a mysterious British Muslim man on his journey across Pakistan and India. And written and directed by Michael Winterbottom, which is the reason I saw it. It's the guy who's done He did The Killer Inside, The Killer Inside Me, a movie that came out in 2010... that I really enjoyed at the time, more than a lot of people anyway, but it was like a big hit for me. And he did A Mighty Heart, which is a big hit for a lot of other people.
Mighty Heart, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, definitely. And he did the trip to, like, the trip to Italy, the trip.
Oh, okay.
The trip to Spain, I think he did too. That's the same, that's that dude. And I'm going to say something about him in this movie, is that I don't think I understood this movie. And... So this movie is about this guy who is like a professional, like, greaser or mechanic, if you want to go with the 80s or 70s action movie route. He's a professional mechanic. He's like, he could be an assassin, he's a thief. Anyway, he could be a lot of, like, shady things.
Mm-hmm.
And he kidnaps this girl in Pakistan, right? And at first you don't know what's for or whatever, and and you realize he was hired to kidnap to make to pretend like someone else kidnapped this girl in order to get her to escape the country for money. He did it all for money, of course. And along the way, like, it keeps the, there's this weird back and forth throughout the movie that I didn't understand, and I think it's heavily relied upon how people see their interactions, how people see interactions with other people differently there. And maybe I just did not hit me at all. But when the movie ended, I was like, that's it? Like, it felt like the movie just finished its first act when it ended. And I'm like, where am I going with this movie? And I didn't end up enjoying it, really.
That's sad.
Even though, like, I was super intrigued until, like,
that's sad.
Then started doing the runaround things halfway through. I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on. So it didn't hit me that well, unfortunately. But that's The Wedding Guest. It is a children's movie. No, it's not. And last movie I saw here is The Nightingale, which made my top 10.
Ooh, The Nightingale. How was that?
Did it make my top 10? I think so, right? Top five.
It might have.
Most anticipated. Yeah. This is written and directed by Jennifer Kent, the lady who brought us The Babadook. I had the pop-up book in this room.
You do?
And it stars Aisling Francoise. Francoise, maybe? Oh, man. And I don't know how to do that one. And then Bekali Ganambar. Sorry, those are the only two I'll say. Set in 1825, Claire, a young Irish convict woman, chases a British officer through the rugged Tasmanian wilderness, bent on revenge for the terrible act of violence he committed against her family. I took Lexi to see this. I saw it at the Music Box. And I'm not saying it's safe to say that she regretted it. She did, like, find the power of this movie, but it's hard to watch.
Oh, it's a hard watch?
Yeah, it's a hard watch. Would you agree?
Is it a hard sit through?
Yeah, it was very emotional, but it was really good. It wasn't hard to sit through.
Okay.
No, I think, yeah, you know what I mean. It's like, you know how I find The Office hard to sit through because it's so cringy and, like, awkward?
That's Curb Your Enthusiasm for me.
Yeah, that's what that is, right? I find this is the same thing on the level of violence against someone.
Well, the thing about Curb is, like, I know they're about to do, it's the dumbest shit that's about to happen. Not the dumbest shit, it's just, like, this super awkward moment that you never want to be a part of. You never want to be in that situation. Like, you yourself, if you were in that situation, you'd be like, how do I reply? Like, you're not yourself, you're not going to reply to it. So, me watching that, knowing it's about to happen, I have the control to hit pause. I'm like, I just, fuck it, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about going to the movies, because I have no control and I'm there, you know?
Yeah, no, you have to sit through it. Now, that's not maybe the best example I could come up with.
Yeah.
But the way I feel about that, and I can't watch it, it was hard for me to watch. This might be hard for you to watch if you're like that about violence, or especially rape.
Well, what was that movie that we just reviewed recently, remember?
Huh?
That we just reviewed a movie recently, Her Smell.
I
had that feeling about that movie also.
That movie is very, yeah.
I had a similar feeling about it. It was hard to watch, and I was like, I just don't. A lot of the stuff that I was saying, I just didn't like, you know?
So, this movie is not a horror movie, so take out any notions you might have expected that of Jennifer Kent's second film. It is a very good film, though. It is directed very well, and it's acted really well. I don't know these actors. None of them are familiar to me.
Okay.
Except for, I think, one of the British officers, or two of them are familiar. And it's like, I think people could get different things from the movie. And definitely, like, if you're, you know, if you look at it at its face value, you could see a lot of more of the anti-feminism going on. Or the fact that it's a male-dominated world kind of angle of it. And Lexi and I seemingly saw it more as the power struggle for the inherent racism that's going on, obviously, today. But mainly back then, because back then this is the British conquering the world setting, right? So, like, they've taken over Australia, and they put their convicts there, and they send British officers to, you know, oversee them. And it's like different levels of, like, bullshittery that's going on. First of all, the ones that are actually afflicted the most and the harshest are the Aborigines who lived there before the British came, right? You got them, who are obviously victims. And you got the convicts, like Irish people, or the other British people that did crimes in England and get sent over there, right?
Yeah.
And they are victims in many several levels. Like, she is with, like, she has a family down there as a convict in the shack, but still there because she's in a country she doesn't know. And she's horribly raped. Her family's killed. It's terrible. That's what the whole thing hinges on, right? And she's a victim in that way. She's paid her price, like, double, triple over, and it doesn't matter to anyone, right? And you get the British officers there who are clearly, initially, and very harshly seen as the perpetrators, the bad guys, right? But they are also on levels of like being mistreated and miscast from their own country, from their own high level of white society, because they're sent to Australia to take care of these people. Mm. And it's like, so it has that going on, and it does a really good job of dancing all that stuff around. But it's essentially a road trip movie, chasing this guy around, trying to get to him before he gets too far ahead, I guess, to kill him because of what this British officer did to her family.
Interesting.
And the black guy that she gets to track, amazing trackers, by the way, it's really good too, and it makes everything more complex, more nicely mm-hmm. complex. And I enjoyed the movie, even though you can't possibly enjoy it. You know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
It's so bleak and it's very dark, and it has maybe one slight moment of humor. It doesn't care about easing that tension for you. It does it.
You enjoy the movie for what throughout. The movie does,
right? It keeps that tone throughout the whole thing. So that's The Nightingale. It is a hit for me, I guess. And that is it for our recent discoveries. We're going to take a break. And when we return, we'll review our first film of the evening, which is a kind of a little smash hit. Everyone's talking about it right now. It's Ready or Not. So stay with us.
So at midnight, you have to play a game.
Why?
It's just something we do when someone new joins the family.
A game. What game? Hide and seek? Are we really going to play that?
Well, the rules are simple. You can hide anywhere. We then try to find you.
So there's no way for me to win, right?
You stay hidden until dawn.
No, thank you.
Good luck. What the hell is this? How old is this thing?
I know you're in here.
Oh, Jesus. You shot the maid.
Does she look like she's wearing a giant white wedding dress, Emily?
Holy shit!
I had to play along so that I can get you out.
It's insane.
They think they have to kill you before sunrise, or something very bad will happen to the family.
If we don't find her and perform the ritual, we're all dead.
Found her.
God damn it, Emily!
I don't know what I'm doing!
Today's video is called Getting to Know Your Crossbow.
I forgot my gun.
Why don't you just use mine?
Mr. LeDomas, I just saw her running.
A bride's wedding night takes a sinister turn when her eccentric new in-laws force her to take part in a terrifying game. It's hide and seek. It's not that terrifying.
I mean, depends how you're playing it.
I guess so. The movie we're talking about is Ready or Not, directed by two people.
Yes, it was.
Matt Benelli Open and Tyler Gillett. And it's written by two people, so, Guy Busick and Ryan Murphy.
Wait, the Ryan Murphy? The Ryan Murphy?
I don't know.
The guy who did all the shows?
He did Wrong Turn.
Probably not.
Minutes to Pass or something.
Okay, didn't do shows? Okay.
I don't know. I didn't look.
The famous Ryan Murphy, for sure.
Anyways, this is starring Samara Weaving, Adam Brody, Mark O'Brien, Henry Zerny, Andy McDowell.
Andy McDowell.
Yeah, Melanie Scrofano, Christian Brun, and we'll leave it at, I don't know, Elise Levesque, and yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
So I'll start, since this is my first. This is a horror mystery thriller, according to IMDb. Ready or Not. So, I don't know. I'm going to go real quick. I feel like they didn't care, and they did care about certain things in the movie, and I feel like they shouldn't have cared. They should have just picked one. Either you go full force of you care, right, and you think you're doing, like, you need to go, like, This is very serious to us, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Or you go and it's like, it's just comedic, and they went both ways. And I think the movie needed to do one or the other, not both. You could kind of play with a little bit of both, but you can't. The movie should know itself what it is like. And I felt that it did lean overall towards more comedic side than it did for the horror side, I would say. Mm-hmm. The horror side just happened to be part of the stuff that's going around in the movie. Overall, though, I did like the whole Once they get into it about how there's a pack and they get into this whole history, I like the history. I like the whole thing about the family and how that works. So that was actually fun to watch. But then it's just like everything that happens is just like they were almost meant for failure. Everything was set up for, you know, just for failure. So, yeah, the movie was fun to watch, but I can't say I liked it as much as I wanted to, I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's my feelings about the movie.
Ditto. For reasons that could be exactly the same, but for me, I thought of them differently.
Okay.
But basically, same feels. Like, this is an enjoyable movie. I did have fun watching it. I don't, like, regret watching it. But it makes sense what you say about Eileen, you know, it kind of didn't lean fully in the one direction.
Right.
For me, it just felt that it had a crucial ingredient missing. And I'll talk about that specifically in spoilers because it correlates to how it all shakes out at the end. But the overall mystery that the movie tries to depict as to as to why they're doing this, like, didn't need to be there. I think it's pretty simple and whatever. We've never not thought that it wasn't real. And the whole point is that they're doing it.
Right.
Which is, you know, the way the actual game works is that it's like a random thing. She, you know, goes through this randomizer of cards or a game will be printed on this card randomly, whatever, or however it works, magically. Yeah. And
magically.
Whatever game it says, the family has to play to initiate a new member to the family when they're married in. I assume not newborns, is my point. Married in, I mean. And,
yeah, I think it's outside family.
Right.
If you marry into the family or it's just outside of
it. Right.
Yeah.
And apparently whatever game it is, it could be Chutes and Ladders or Charades, you have to play it together that night. And but if it's this one game, hide and seek, if it's only hide and seek,
yeah,
then it has to be, it's meant to be like a sacrifice, a ritual, where the family members have to kill that new person instead of welcoming them into the fold. So and that's what she draws. So the rest of the movie is just like a...
Well, I like that there is a possible winning and a possible losing, though.
Yes.
Because they say that in the beginning. It's like, and they don't make it... It's kind of played off in the movie, but they do say, like, you win if you make it to daylight, right?
Till dawn,
till dawn. And then you win if you make it till dawn. But it's said just like... as a joke, like, I guess, you win if you get to dawn. But then the movie plays in, like, no, like, we need to win by dawn. If not, we lose.
Yeah.
Like, and you're just like, oh, okay.
I think where the movie falls apart is in its lack of creativity. Because I think that if the movie is not going to be, like, it's not going to fully delve into the concept. Because it doesn't. Not to me, Ruff. I'd say an interesting concept. It's fun. It's right.
No. But I didn't say it dove into the concept. I said it dove into the history of set up.
I'm not saying that you did say good. That. That was well done. I'm just using you to make that point harder. If they're not going to delve into the concept and just have like a, you know, just a concept to have fun with, right? Then they should at least be creative with the gore, go nuts with the action or with the tension they could do. You know, you think of movies like Don't Breathe, got super creative with that stuff.
Yes,
like,
very much so.
Don't Breathe is a perfect example. It's just a simple thing. And that movie's way better, actually, for many reasons. But, and one of the reasons is that it was creative with the way it created tension and the way it could shift your thoughts on, like, who's important to you in a scene, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, who do you care for to live out or die in a certain scene when it comes to these kind of gory kill or be killed movies. And this movie didn't have that. And that's one of the disappointment things that I figured out throughout the movie. Because none of those scenes were unfortunately that memorable. Unfortunately. Except for one involving a kitchen, actually, which I liked.
Oh, yeah. That was a good scene.
That was a good scene. But it's hard for me to say anymore. We could talk about the performances and stuff, general stuff. But it's hard for me to say much more without getting into spoilers, really.
No, we can get into spoilers and just talk about performances and everything, though.
Okay. So you want to get into the performance stuff in the spoilers?
Yeah, in the spoilers.
Oh, okay.
We don't have to get a spoiler.
Dance around anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So let's get into spoilers starting right now.
Are you okay? Did something happen?
Yeah, no. I don't feel very well.
Well,
If you want to lie down, can't we just play the game tomorrow?
I know, no one has to be too late.
Kill!
Hey! Get him, Jordy!
Woo! We made it, Daddy!
Take it off, now!
Daddy?
You just keep on playing there, buddy.
Oh, you're so tense.
You, lady in white. Look at this, you must be the bride.
Hi.
Fitch Bradley.
Grace.
Pleasure. Alex.
Hi, Fitch, how are you?
Well done. Sorry we cut it so close. We couldn't get our regular charter out of De Gaulle this morning. And I cannot fly commercial anymore, right? It's the worst.
Grace!
Hi.
Hi. I'm Emily. Oh, and your dress is amazing. I've been totally stalking you on Instagram.
Oh, really? That's...
We're going to be best friends.
Hi. Nice to see you.
I'm so excited to be a part of your family.
He will decide that, my dear.
Adeline, it's nice to see you.
Brown-haired niece, you continue to exist.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is 11:55.
All right.
Let's talk about the main actress, which is...
who looks familiar to us.
Samara Weaving, yeah. Her name is Grace in the movie. She, I actually really like her. She did a good job in that beginning switch. I love that because she's very like, she's like, okay, I'm trying to be like part of this family. You know, it's my wedding night, and she's talking to herself. She's like, well, I guess you got to play a fucking game with your new in-laws, right? Mm-hmm. And shit like that. And it's like she's trying to be part of it. And then once she realizes that, like, that whole first murder happens with the maid. And she's like, holy shit, like, shit got real. She freaks out. She yells at her husband, you know, and like, what the fuck, and blah, blah, blah. But she's like, genuine fear, genuine, like, all of a sudden it did become this thriller movie, right?
Yeah.
So I did like that, and I did like her acting there in the movie, because I think it was she has to sell it most of the part, and even though she straps her boots and everything, and that's when we get later to the kitchen scene that really does a really good job for I think that was a really good job for her as well, because she's not akin to doing any of this. She's just trying to live at this point, you know, she's just trying to make it through. So, and then after that, I would say it does die down, especially towards the end. But overall, I think that first half of the movie, I think she does a really good job acting-wise.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel.
I think overall she did okay. I guess I stopped noticing her performance as the movie got ridiculous. Well, not ridiculous, because it was always ridiculous. Like, the concept is ridiculous. But
yeah.
Meaning, like, it got ridiculous for what it was trying to do. Like, it went... off the deep end or of their own concept. Like, they fucked up. You know, I was just noticing more plot errors and concept errors and, like, action scene, you know, mistake, you know, like, kind of blahness.
Yeah.
That I stopped noticing it, I guess. But you're right. I did. Up until, really, the kitchen scene, I really did like her. She has a very... She screams really well.
She does.
She's a good screamer. Yeah. And yeah, you can, you know, and that's, you need that in a good horror movie, I guess. So that's a good thing,
right?
She's a good screamer for sure. Yeah, and everyone else. It's funny because I haven't seen Succession, but I imagine this is what the Succession family is like.
Oh, sweet Jesus! You know what? I thought of the exact same thing.
The two brothers, especially, remind me, because I've seen the trailers over and over again. They kind of remind me of the family.
It's hard not to when you watch anything on TV.
But I refuse to watch that show because I'm tired of watching rich people's problems. Like, I don't care. I know everyone's saying, oh, it's amazing. I'm sure it is. And I love Brian Cox, but no. Anyway, and this movie reminded me of that. But the ultra-rich thing angle of... So here's my problem. I have several problems. Here's one problem that I thought of way after the movie.
Yeah.
And it's this idea of taking away blame from the rich. I know that on the face of it, it's not doing that at all. It's because of these rich assholes that she's in this problem, right? But...
Uh-huh.
What I'm talking about is that this movie presupposes that other rich families, because they mentioned another rich family that burned their house, you know, they all died in some mysterious fire, it's not exclusively their fault that they lord over the poor. You know, it's because they were given this power by another level higher than them. You know, so it kind of takes away some of the power that they're
Yes and
not
no.
Not as bad, not as holy, not as creative about their money, or not as possessive or as selfish.
Uh-huh.
Even though this movie tries to play both ways, and I don't think the movie understands that it kind of did that, kind of separated those. I don't know. It kind of felt bad to think about. Like, I didn't like that thinking, and I think the movie inadvertently did that for me, and it made them even less. It made them even less cool as villains to be killed. You know, it made him almost like lesser. It's almost like the main villain was Satan than it is.
Yeah, no,
you
know it, what I mean? They, well, it almost justified their actions.
Yes, in a way, right, yeah. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, too. Yeah, you're right. And it just doesn't feel good in the movie. You know, it doesn't feel good for adversaries for this girl. You know, they were just good enough adversaries. So that's a bummer. But the main bummer is that on top of the fact that there's no creativity in the gore, they could have gone really crazy. Or even like Overlord has some creative shit in it when you think of that kind of type. Leo, careful. Okay. I stand up and you take some spot.
Yep.
Anyway, the problem I had is that if they did one simple thing. No, it's not a simple thing, actually. It's kind of hard. But if they actually tried to make the family, like all the other family, not just the husband, right, into like more rounded people. Like, let's say, I'm not saying one or two can't be douchebags, like the rich type douchebags that we expect them to be.
Right.
But not all of them.
All of them, yeah.
Why all of them? Why do they all have to be cartoonishly villain? I mean, I'm sure, again, these people exist. That's fine. But not all of them. If they made some of them, like the mother figure, who at the beginning seemed like pretty okay or cool, like okay too cool, but the movie never gives her enough time to actually get there before she fucking, you know, says all that shit right before she dies. And she,
right.
It's so ridiculous. She just does the 180 on what the movie was trying to tell us that she wasn't. It was so dumb. And anyway, if the movie just like focused on making these characters different types, right, like people who gives a shit, who are stuck in a situation, make us feel that they are stuck in that situation, making the father figure not an imbecile, selfish, you know, grandiose asshole who just complains about problems all the time. Like, it just, the movie would have been way more richer because we would have been actually like, We would have enjoyed the tension more. We would have like seen like some of those deaths of not just the maids, I'm saying, but like of the other people, or their maiming, or when she barely gets away and they're frustrated. We would have sensed more of a conflict there. I think it would have felt more dramatic and more cool, and to make us like kind of pull and tug on their situation.
Right.
And I think they fucked it up by just making them like scriptly, cartoonishly bad.
Well, I think the movie was trying to make it like that's where they were like doing this whole half in kind of thing with the humor, and they were trying to be serious about it at the same time. And that's one of the humor aspects of the movie was they're comically rich. There's this comical rich people, rich trope, stereotype of what we feel that, oh, they're just entitled to everything. I can't even, a cup of water that's right there. Bailey, please get me that. You know, like it's, even though it's within reach of him, he's too rich. Right. He's too powerful for that. You can't.
But even the richest asshole of that version still has other thoughts. Not always.
Well,
them,
my thing is like, I think they were trying to do it comically as in oh, we'll never have to deal with this. It's really not a thing until they find out that, oh, it really is a thing.
Yeah.
It's just that, Now that it's actually confronted you, what we're going to find out are do you have the minerals, essentially?
Nice.
Right. Yes.
Snatch reference, guys.
Yes, very much so.
So
that's what is basically the movie. The movie setting it up is like, are these entitled people, are they willing to fight for their entitlement?
Right. It'd be one thing. Or seen like a slow progression of them, like, you know, buckling down on the fact that they have to kill this innocent person.
Well, I just feel like
it would be nice to see that transformation.
No, I do agree with you. I agree to that. We needed, like, I think two characters here to be the strong ones. When we only had one and we kept shunning her away, which was the aunt or the whatever.
And that was also out of the blue.
That was also just like comically super bad, right? At the same time. So I was just like, we needed, I feel like the father figure should have been more of a, That person, yeah. The father and the mother, should have been more
right,
like...
Right, because if he's the leader of the family, yeah. And then the movie's trying to say, like Brian, who is the husband, right? That's Brian? Or Daniel. Sorry. Daniel, who is the husband, the goody-two-shoes, who doesn't want her killed. If they're going to... If they're setting up this leader of the family bit where he is, like, destined to take over, then why don't you show this current leader of the family to be a fucking good leader?
Yeah. That
takes away that power.
I know. It's just instead they're complaining, right. They do a bunch of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was saying, because the movie has those moments where, and there's the humor moments. That's the comically bad of the. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make the like light of a situation, right? They're these stereotypes, and then they do like they fumble around and they kill all the maids, for example, right? Which is funny. Those moments.
The first
work,
two were fun, yeah.
Right, but they work in the movie overall. Like, yeah. None of the times that they murder somebody doesn't work in the movie, right? Well, the first two are the ones that they kill, right? The other one she kills. Remember correctly?
No, well, she kills the last one with the dumbwaiter. But
the dumbwaiter.
The first two are killed by the other woman.
Right, when she's like, she's right over, boom, and then she gets killed. And, yeah. I remember.
That's the one that does a lot of coke, right? Was doing coke a lot before? Yeah.
Twice, the same person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you could, like I said, you could have had it, but I do agree with you. That's where the movie does falter, and it does need something else. I don't know what it needed to be more of a horror, I guess, more of a something. But yeah, that was, it was lacking.
I even would have given this movie an extra like push of positivity if it focused on like on the fact that, because it seems like it feels like it's random, but it's obviously not. Now that we know, because the movie ends with full confirmation that it's Satan who gave this family the power and money and stuff, right? So now that we know that, why didn't the movie like push in on the fact that he seemingly picks hide and seek for the truly honorable people that might be entering in this family, and only the douchebags get in? Why? You know, it'd be funny too, because it seems like, you know, like the husband of that old lady who got the opening of the movie, he gets killed, right? And she felt really bad for it. Like,
right.
Not like, and he wasn't a trophy husband. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was.
And it does seem like it is picking.
The more
like,
they mean to you, the more likely you'll get hide and seek.
Right. I think it does feel like that. And it does feel like, well, this is your chance of. It means more. So this is a sacrifice I need. I need that sacrifice.
And one could say, like, oh, well, Satan clearly fucking with them. They don't want them to have.
Yeah.
Like, but that's fine. But explore it.
No, Satan wants you to work for your. Wants you to actually make a sacrifice.
That's me saying that. That's not the movie saying.
Yeah, no, I know. It does feel like the Satan does want you to actually make a sacrifice worthwhile.
Right.
Not just some bullshit, kill a goat or a random.
They did have goats, though.
They did.
Yeah.
And they did kill goats. Mm-hmm. What's it called? Kill a goat or what's it called? Or a virgin, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Not just some rando. It needed to be a true love or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but then the movie didn't do any of that.
Right.
So,
and
like,
what's funny is that it did commit, though, right? And it did double down that person to be more into the family, right? And it should have doubled down Daniel to be more into the family if she can kill her. Then it would have been like, well, this is the kind of guy we need to lead our family. Because now that he's committed, now that he knows this, everything's real and all this stuff, he's going to be that much more, you know, he can grow the family better or whatever. I guess they could have pushed where they didn't.
Yeah.
And that's where the movie, I don't know, the movie was just trying to have fun, I think, overall. And it did have fun. And like I had fun watching it, like I said, but it was lacking.
Yeah. And also at the end there, when what did you think of Daniel's reversal?
Well, I didn't mind it. I mean, I didn't mind it. Because like the whole purpose of like, well, he got the reversal of like basically the mom, which was what happened with the mom, right? And I think it was the whole he got tilted right after the mom. That's when he actually committed to it.
He seemingly committed to it when, I don't think it was that point. It was when he realized, he said it all out, I guess, when he realized that no matter what happens, no matter how much he would protect her, she's not going to come back to him.
Yeah.
She's not going to actually stay married to him. And that's when he went the other way, doubled down, which beguiles everything, because then it means you didn't really love her.
Yeah.
Right? It means like all these stupid things that the movie tried so hard to get us to believe in the first 90% of the movie.
So are we getting then it's the girl or the other significant other that needs to love them, not the other way around?
No, what I'm saying is that I think that was just a screenwriter thinking he's clever and he's not. I think it's just a stupid move overall. It would have been way more like, it would have even been funnier if they leaned in this way better.
I think
like to force his hand without his, but not, but against his will. You know what I'm saying? Like the family do it for him.
yeah,
or something crazy like that. That would have been something. And also, like, they weren't even 100% sure that it would happen. Yeah. It's just like a ritual passed down at this point. It isn't right. Like,
it is like a folklore almost.
Right. Yeah. It's like if you give 9/11 1,000 years, will people believe that 9/11 happened? You know, things like that, right? History just changed from, like, I don't know if it happened. I wasn't there.
Right.
You know, so that's a wild, definitely example to explain this, but whatever. So, yeah, those are, anything else? Sorry.
No. No, I do like the ending, how basically the explosions, that was cool.
It was cool, but I guess I wanted something. I thought it would be something cooler, honestly, than just blowing up. But I think they did it just to create punchlines. Like when the mother and the kids are running away, and that's funny. They did it for funny effect. I don't think they did it for like any gruesome effect.
Right, no, I know that.
Or but anything cool.
Yeah.
Like, or something. That's what I'm saying. So yeah, that's all I got on Radio Night. Kind of more surface level than I thought it would be. Or than it shouldn't be this surfacey.
Agreed.
But
apologies for the snoring kid.
Is he snoring? Yes, he is. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll review our second film, which is Bernadette, right? Where would you go, Bernadette? Where'd she go?
I miss you, sir.
Stay with us.
Morning, Lucy.
Hey, Mom.
Bernadette Fox was simply the most exciting thing in the world of architecture 20 years ago.
Well, no one told me about her.
I think what happened to my mom is that she got so focused on her family, she forgot about herself.
Honey, are you getting enough sleep?
Sleep? What's up?
Yeah. So from what you're saying, she ran over a mother at school.
Bernadette!
Incoming. What do we do?
Punch her!
Then she created an environment which destroyed a neighbor's home.
Your hillside just slid into my home! My yard! My Japanese maples! The bird bath is practically in my living room!
It's too late to say you're sorry.
People like you must create. If you don't, you become a menace to society.
How would I know? Why should I care?
Something unexpected has come up.
Just thinking about it's got my heart racing.
Please don't bother trying to find her.
I have concocted a plan.
Bernadette!
She's not there!
A loving mom becomes compelled to reconnect with her creative passions. After years of sacrificing herself for her family, her leap of faith takes her on an epic adventure that jumpstarts her life and leads her to triumphant rediscovery.
That is a terrible plot description.
Isn't it? They're both the same. One just says it's from a book.
Uh-huh.
This is Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Based on a best-selling book. Directed by Richard Linklater. Written screenplay by Richard Linklater and Holly Gent. And it's written by a novel... by Maria Semple, or based on a novel.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
It's all good.
There was somebody else, so sorry. Hold on, being an asshole. Vincent Palmel Jr., screenplay also.
Yeah, three people, I think, co-wrote, right?
Yeah. But it's directed by Richard Linklater. This starring Kristen Wiig, Kate Blanchett, Judy Greer, Lawrence Fishburne, Billy Crudup, Troyan Belisario.
That's the girl?
No.
Oh, okay.
The girl is Emma Nelson.
Okay. That's the only one whose name I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know where this one's. She's Becky. Becky.
Yeah. I like the daughters. I mean, the performances, I mean.
I went last time, but I almost want to go this time, too.
You do, man.
So... no,
I assume
fine.
You want me to go first on the last two.
No, actually, I don't care.
Okay.
No, go ahead. What did you think, Oscar?
Ghost in the Cellar. I think this movie is has a lot of stuff in it that I really enjoy. Primarily Kate Blanchett, who is like top tier favorite actress for me. I'm not saying she can't do no wrong, but I think I love her performances even in like I can't think of her worst movie, but whatever that would be, I loved her in it, I'm sure. That's how, I mean, that's how much I respect her. But the movie overall, though, has a lot of mistakes, I think. And I think it feels completely unfulfilled. And it does not mirror that plot synopsis that you gave.
100% agree.
I mean, there's a spoiler alert for when we get to it that, you know, we can talk more about that specific point. But, man, this movie is strange. It's strange how it's, like, structured. It's strange how the scene, between the scenes, you know, like, it feels like it's just her movie, right? Bernadette's story. Uh-huh. And it is. I mean, there's some voiceover with the daughter kind of, like, preemptively telling you what's going to happen. But, like, it is her story, but it, the way it jumps around between the other members of the family, and it just felt strange and off-putting. Maybe it was like an editing dilemma. I don't know what, and I don't even know if I will have the answer for that, exactly what specifically created this rift for me in watching it. And I just saw it today. And but yeah, like I said, there is still a lot of stuff to enjoy. There's individual scenes that I enjoyed. I like some of the ranting that happens in the movie. I like the little daughter-mother relationship that happens in the movie. That's really good. I think that's good stuff. I actually like the neighbor stuff with, what's her name? Judy Greer, is it? No, Judy Greer is a psychologist with the
Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig. I did like her. I liked their dynamic, whatever. So yeah, some stuff to like for sure, but it is not a hit. So that's my thought.
Okay. Yeah, I can mirror some of that. I'll agree with you with the fact that they those are missed opportunities, of especially with the description. I just felt like the movie wasn't saying that at all. It was more like a breakdown, a mental depression breakdown of somebody, and the movie needed to, I guess, it almost like went half in of explaining to us what they really needed, what she really needed, and what she was like kind of trying to say. And I've seen a trailer for this, and I feel like the trailer did more. I feel like the trailer did more for what's it called, of that, of talking about what the plot or about the things.
I don't remember the trailer.
Watch the trailer. Lawrence Fishburne's in it.
Yeah.
And basically saying, like, there's a project. Like, you should be doing projects. It's only you're just going crazy. And I was just like,
Yeah, maybe the trailer was showing you a better movie.
Yeah, giving you a better angle of it.
A potential movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like the movie focused way too much on something and didn't give us enough. Mm. And then also how the movie, I watched this last week in comparison to you. I didn't like the ending when I first saw it, especially how it just ends.
I didn't like it either.
So, and then, but I actually kind of don't hate it as much anymore. Anyways,
I think you just like, yeah, you just stepped away from it. That's all right.
Yeah, but
you can't hate.
I do like her performance though, and I do like her relationship with her daughter, and just like she's obviously struggling with something. And I feel like we are pussyfooting around it the whole movie, and to talk about it, and it's a hard subject matter, you know, harder than it looks. Anyways, but yeah, it was missed opportunity overall. It was. I wanted to like it more than it was, for sure. But yeah, this one just didn't hit too home for me. But it was a good watch. Like I still appreciate what it did, I guess.
Yeah, I appreciate what it tried to do, and I guess I enjoyed the performances. Billy Crudup, I haven't seen him forever.
Don't get me wrong.
I like watching him.
Yeah, so do I.
He's cool. I like him.
I feel like he does a lot of wholesome stuff. Or he has to be wholesome.
I don't know. When did he get that reputation? When did he think that he has to have that reputation or something?
I don't know, but it's been like...
He's Dr. Manhattan. I don't know what the
last couple movies, though. I don't know.
But he's still talking like that's the first...
Even in Dr. Manhattan, he felt wholesome until he wasn't.
Nah, he was in a hardcore movie with his dong out, murdering Vietnamese people. I don't know about how wholesome you think.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, I did really appreciate though Kate Blanchett's character. And it does rely a lot on her acting. Yeah. Which is good because she obviously can do it, and she obviously did.
She hella cares it.
So yeah, let's talk. I wanted to talk about into. I don't know. Should we just get into spoilers? Because
that's up to you if you want.
I feel like we almost have to, because I think we're just. What is spoiling this movie up to? Where is it up to? She, you know, up to a certain point, up to where the movie finally pushes out of. Well,
it feels like this movie, with this problem of this movie, and this is right before we get into spoilers, let's say, is this movie seemingly has the first act is too long. The first act covers 80% of the movie. Yeah. And then it skips the second second act, and then it goes right into the third act, which is the last 10 to 20% of the movie, and that's how this movie is structured. It feels, and that's why it's so off putting and all that. So like almost like we can't spoil 80% of the movie because we already described like her. We can describe her problems, and her manicness and her anxiety, and but all that's on display from the beginning. It only starts to actually, like I said, fall apart into this the third act. 80% of the movie in, you know what I mean? Like, it just takes forever. It just takes forever. I don't know. But that's I guess, the real criticism we have that we can't spoil because it's all there. All right, but now we can get to it. Spoilers for Where'd You Go, Bernadette, starting right now.
You know, what LG doesn't know is that I am still obsessing about L.A.
What do you mean?
You know, just last night, right? I woke up to pee. You know, I'm half asleep. I'm a blank slate. And then the data starts reloading. It's Bernadette Fox, 20 Mile House, destroyed, failed.
Yeah.
And it's like failure has got its teeth in me and it won't stop shaking.
You done?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Because I know you can't honestly believe any of this nonsense. As amusing as it is, it obscures the larger point. Which is that people like you must create. That's what you were brought into this world to do, Bernadette. If you don't, you become a menace to society. I think there's one very simple answer to all of your problems. Get your ass back to work and create something.
So, but I guess I almost have to talk about just Bernadette herself.
Yeah,
and I think we get the snippets of what's wrong with her when she starts watching that documentary about herself on the computer, yeah. Right? And it's about how
we get like the second half of the video.
Well,
later.
we get about like kind of like why she is how she is, why this house is a hot mess all the time, why this like it explains a lot of what's going on in her life. And you find out that Bernadette is obviously like just somebody who's going through depression and somebody who needs an outlet. She's a very creative and intelligent person, right? And you find that out because through this documentary, right? You find out that she's, oh, shit, like she's won this MacArthur's Awards or whatever and blah, brilliant architect, obviously a visionary, a super artistic person, you know. They make her like this, almost like a Frank Lloyd Wright type of person if you look at it, right? And the artist, in the architect world.
Yeah, they name check them too.
They do. I'm pretty sure they do. It's very prominent and very good right person here in the Midwest anyway.
Yeah.
Especially in Chicago.
No, he's worldwide famous.
No, I know he's worldwide famous, but especially here in Chicago, we have so much architects. That being said, we talk about her like that. So, you know, you find out that, and then she hasn't been doing anything. She just focuses on her daughter. She has fun with her daughter. She obviously has secluded herself more and more. Her relationship with her husband's falling apart. It's just non-existent. It's not really falling apart. It's just not there. You know, they don't have, he doesn't have time to do anything because he's super busy, you know, in comparison to how they were before. That's all it is, right? But you obviously find out that she's a depressed person. She needs things, but at the same time, she's very rich and she just lets money solve her almost all her issues. Which is, I can pay somebody to do everything for me. I can pay somebody to do this for me.
Well, she has the ability. She has the wealth to be able to live a life where she doesn't have to interact with anyone else.
Right. You always order out.
But I feel like I know
you use Amazon for everything.
And I know what you're saying. And you're right. That video does elaborate on that. But it feels like 75 other examples are there to tell the same thing throughout this elongated first act of what's Bernadette, what's wrong with her, you know? And before someone would ask who hasn't seen it, like, well, then why do we care about her? Like, well, we care about her because we can see the artistry and genius behind her. We see that she's a good mother.
Yeah.
So it's like there are positive things about her too. It's just that
What I'm getting at is that we get that she's an artist, right? We get that we get that she has a problem, right? And she obviously is like just kind of. A lot of issues going on. We get, like you said, 75 different examples. She's at the drugstore. She does this. You know, whatever happens. All these different things. She's insomnia. You know, never sleeps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You have all these problems. But the thing is, there's never no one ever understands what her solution should be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And no one until we get to the third act, basically. And then the problem is there's no second act, like you said. We don't
get... The second act technically is the intervention.
I guess. It's like her leaving almost.
Right. That's the second act, but it's just one scene.
That's the thing.
And then,
it's almost like getting no second act.
And it's almost like the title of the movie doesn't start until that point when she runs away. Like, why is the title this? She should have run away 20 minutes to the beginning.
And it's frustrating because we just followed her 90% of the movie already, right? And now we're not following her anymore. And then she just starts making decisions up, and you're like, well, we knew everything she was going through before. Now we know nothing. You know, that's a frustrating part of the movie also.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we never get that she needs to do something work-wise, artistic-wise, until like almost the end of the movie. You don't get that. You don't like the movie's trying to like doesn't really do a good job of alluding to it or anything, right? Until she has that meeting with Lawrence Fishburne, until she goes to Antarctica, that you finally realize like, well, she just needs meeting him. She just needs to find something, an outlet, right? And an outlet for herself, not an outlet not for her kid or for her family, an outlet for herself, which is a job,
yeah.
Which is what the father does. The father has his outlet, right? But she doesn't. And that's the movie doesn't do a good enough job, even though we get examples of everything else is wrong with her, of how to fix that, you know, until the very end. And then by the end, it's just like, well, what the fuck? Because it's the end and you're done. Mm-hmm. And that's the frustrating part of the movie. That was super frustrating for me. Yeah. I don't know if you felt the same way or not.
Yeah, it was frustrating, man. It's like, it's just, it's both too much and not enough. And
right.
I don't know how the movie is able to do that. Like, how do you have both problems? It just feels completely incomplete, and I don't know, man. Either should have been like a darker version. Like I think it wanted a happy ending, but it couldn't get out of this rut of showing her never happy, right? And it should have just stuck to its guns. It's like Blue. Have you seen the movie Blue Jasmine with also Kate Blanchett?
Yeah, I did see that movie. Yeah.
That's a better version of this, where it's about this woman who used to be rich, and it has to deal with a life.
Yeah.
Of you know this innate thinking that you should get what you used to have, what you will expect, you know, have the pretty dresses and the food whenever you want, things like that,
right?
And she and her anxiety and depression in that movie, and I guess a little psychosis, I don't know if psychosis is the right word, but drives her to, you know, the end of that movie, which is really well earned by that point.
Yeah.
And but that's a darker version, different movie, of course. But it feels like this movie's trying to be like a lighter version of Blue Jasmine, kind of. Same actress too, which is funny. And but no, it just force feeds this ending, this happy ending for her.
Right, and that may be true. That is true, based on true events or whatever, because it is on a book about her life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the character,
yeah,
Bernadette.
Yeah.
She does end up building this thing in Antarctica and everything, right?
I also think the most interesting part of to tell the Bernadette story is between the 20 years before the movie starts.
I agree. And I feel like, why don't we get a snippets of that?
Yeah.
And I almost feel like the movie would have been better if we went like flashback the whole way through.
Yeah.
And right. I think if it went like, this is my life of how I got to my point of where I am. And
like, see this slowly degeneration of her, like, talking to less people, right? Being able to sleep less and less,
right?
Things like that, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and I think it would have been better. And then we're like, well, now I'm at a crossing point where I think I know how to fix my life, but my family thinks I should be in a loony bin, and I don't know what I should do, and I think I should figure it out myself. And I think it would have been better. I think it would have been, like, a better way to go about it or something. Like, if you were just, like, I'm looking, reminiscing back in my, you know... But at the same time, she is like this. She's very artistic the whole way through and through the movie. She's very out there herself. She's in herself. She doesn't really care about anybody. She feels very hipster, but unique at the same time. You know, like I want to label her hipster, but at the same time, she's not. She's like above that or beyond it. But at the same time, she is that. It's in a weird mix of both. You know.
Yeah.
But she's not also like this super posh wealth, I need to drive a McLaren kind of car, you know, or a Bentley thing. It's just that she's well off, and she's been well off for a while. So that's how she acts as well. Cause money does solve a lot of her issues. Cause she has a freaking person that she just has her do everything, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, but yeah, I do agree. The movie was, I don't know. It needed to, needed to give us something better. And that first act was way too long, and it did just kind of wrap up, and you were like, that's it? Yeah. And I stayed after the credits to watch the whole thing build, because I needed that. I needed to watch that so I can at least get something out of this ending that I felt was rushed.
Yeah, it's almost like if the movie maybe had zeroed in on the father and the daughter being the protagonists and seeing what they see through their eyes, either more or exclusively, and then we see, you know, the clips of Bernadette and her life and all that, and then be able to understand, like, chase her throughout Antarctica. I think that all that would have felt way more fulfilling.
Yeah, the daughter did a good job acting overall.
Oh, yeah.
And I think she was she did the best at selling at it, and the husband didn't, sadly. But it's just like,
Yeah, his was strange because the movie opens with them being kind of a happy, quirky couple, right?
And it does, family. Yeah.
And then, like, and over the course, because they mentioned that's when the daughter puts out the Antarctica idea, right? And it's like a month away or a month at, or
six, yeah, weeks, but the most. The thing, the also a very crucial thing about this movie is that since they're in Seattle and it's just, they should get snow. I don't see why they wouldn't. I thought they do get snow. I know it rains all the time, but
yeah. Well, if it rains, it means it could snow if it lowers.
Right, exactly. I thought it does snow. I just felt like it never came there because they're like, oh, it's coming to Christmas break. And I'm like, you guys don't even have snow yet. Or it doesn't feel like it's cold out. No one looks the part, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that's shitty, but I'm watching another show right now.
For all I know, maybe that's how it is.
Maybe it is, right?
Yeah, but it
doesn't feel like when Veronica Mars, they're like, it's summer all the time, you know, it feels like it's summer all the time. You're like, oh, it's Merry Christmas. And you're like, oh, fuck, I forget you're in fucking Southern California, where it's the same temperature all the time.
All the time. How boring is that?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, so, I mean, this movie, that's the main problem. And that's really the only problem to hinge on, because it's such a huge problem.
It is.
That it's...
And it's shitty because Cate Blanchett does an amazing job of playing this actress, or this character, should I say, as
the way she walks around.
As an actor.
And, that walks around and does the emailing to what's the name of the
Sanjay or something? No, Sanjay.
I know it.
Manjula. Manjula.
There you go, Manjula. Who I thought we were gonna meet, and then it turns out it was like this fucking scam.
I love that part.
Holy shit!
Yeah,
and the FBI guy is like so out of place there. Yeah. He's like, he belongs in a crime movie. I'm like, why is he in the Richard Linklater movie?
Right.
You know, that's how it felt like to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever. You know, I wish it was better.
Agreed.
It sucked because it made the most anticipated movie.
I know.
That's okay. That's what happens. And everything is a hit. So I think that's it for our review of Where'd You Go, Bernadette.
I agree.
Yeah. And we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we'll review our last movie of the evening, an even longer title, The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Stay with us.
We built these ships, dredged these canals in the San Francisco they never knew existed. This is our home. You two stick together.
I always come back to the old house.
What if it's empty?
What if we just peeked inside?
We could throw parties.
You could put on one of your plays.
We could yell.
It is this house. Our old house.
That's not your old house, and that's not your neighborhood.
A young man searches for home in the changing city that seems to have left him behind. This is The Last Black Man in San Francisco, written and directed by Joel Talbot, also written by Jimmy Fails.
Starring Jimmy Fails.
Starring Jimmy Fails, sir.
I thought it was Talbot.
Talbot, yeah, sorry.
Okay, Talbot. Talbot. I might have to get it wrong.
Talbot, yeah, sorry.
No,
it's okay. Starring Jimmy Fails, Jonathan Majors, Danny Glover, Tichina Arnold, Bob Morgan, Mike Epps, and then we'll leave it at that. Mike Epps is the guy in the car who has the car.
Who lives in the car.
Lives in the car.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Because you've seen him before.
It.
Yeah, very proud.
Yeah.
I'll go, since this is my pick.
All right.
Interesting movie, for sure. I think I know why the movie is what it's called, even though we had a play that told us.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I want to I actually liked a lot what this movie had to say about San Francisco and about mainly Jimmy Fails, and about just the kind of person he wants to be.
Hmm.
All the effort and everything he puts into of maintaining this house that was a family house, you know, before that they had lost or whatever for whatever reasons that they had lost. And it seems like no one cares besides him, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting to watch. And it feels like he should have figured it out how to get out of here a long time ago through not being in San Francisco, because San Francisco hasn't wanted him since he's been out of that house, since he was a boy.
Right.
So, like, as a black man, he can't, if you can't afford a four million or $1 million house, you shouldn't be in San Francisco, essentially. And obviously he can't. But the movie, I felt like it spoke a lot about just black culture in San Francisco.
Yes.
And I guess the mentality, not specifically from Jimmy Fails, the main character that we follow, and how he doesn't want to fit the mold. But at the same time, not the mold of the black man.
Yes.
Which is very important. And I thought that was very interesting to watch. I did like what I watched overall. It was very sad to watch. It's very interesting at the same time. But at the same time, I was very, I was still confused actually watching it, and trying to understand it. So yeah, that's essentially my viewing of Last Black Man. What did you think? What did you think, Oscar?
I have a very similar feeling. I saw it like 4 days before you saw it. So I had a little more time to think about it. And I really I've not used the time so wisely or anything, but I did listen to an interview after that to try to get a better grasp, because I was also confused upon watching it. It took me 2 sittings, and not because it was bad, but because of it's, you know, middle of the night kind of thing. I had to sleep and I had to stop it. But it was confusing as to like what the movie was, what the movie wanted me to take from it, right? And not to say I didn't understand what was happening. When the scenes were happening, I understood the San Francisco angle overall. I understood the black angle, of course, which is about that heavily, and maybe not every thematic point, but I understood the main stuff. But I was still confused as to what I was thinking about it. What should I think? Do I like it? Right? Once I made a decision as to what I think about it, and ultimately, I do feel pretty clear about what I think about this movie, and I just think it's not for me. I think this movie is as a gigantic problem. This movie is not. Obviously it's not perfect, but I'm saying it's not a bad movie at all. It's a very good movie for a lot of people, or for a certain type of people, or for like. I can see critics are really raving about it. I have friends of mine who love this movie, and I will never take that away from them or try to. But I would say that it's just not for me. I didn't ultimately get it enough. I didn't feel what the movie wanted me to feel in the same way. And I ended up feeling more hollow about its themes in the end. And I think, you know, and that's probably, you know, perfectly fine and legit. And it took me a while to get there. But I felt like I think this movie's concentrated effort towards San Francisco made me feel like I didn't understand a lot of the stuff that was happening or that was being shown. And I feel like I had to live there in San Francisco to understand a lot of the stuff that was happening. And I'm not saying that's true. I'm just saying the movie made me feel that way because of how long it took me to grasp it, right? And I'm being vague on purpose. But I really love the performances. I really love the cinematography in this movie. It looks beautiful, this movie. The way it shows the house with such, like, adoration. You know, the inside of his house, and the outside, of course, the way, and you know, you see Jimmy Fails like protecting it and loving it, but we also see it with our own eyes how the camera is Jimmy fails his point of view kind of thing. You know, the house is special. No other house is shown that way.
No other house.
You know, but other vistas are. You know, you think of the, even though it looks, you know, the opening with the biohazmat suits guys, you know, testing the water or whatever in the harbor. Like, that still looks, you know, very striking visuals going on there about San Francisco, that side of it, right? And, yeah, and even though that's supposed to kind of emanate danger and whatever, like, it's good stuff. I like it. It's, but, like, man, I either I just completely missed everything in this movie, or the movie just felt like not for me. It felt too artistic and too, like, artistic meaning, like, I think its themes were completely rooted in reality and stuff that happens today and that people relate to. But I think the world setting was kind of like a little fantastical. Like, everything was set a couple turns higher than reality, right? Or away from reality. And it's, it kind of, everything's a little heightened. And I think it kind of, I think it just turned me off from it. That's overall what I think.
That's sad.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if it's sacrilegious or not, because this is a number one movie for a lot of people.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, already, yeah. And I get it. I get why they would say that. But I think of, you know, I think of last year where we had Black Klansman and Blindspotting. Blindspotting worked way better for me, and that movie is, it's, you know, it's a different kind of movie completely, but we think of black cinema these days, right? I think that movie accomplished this shit way more powerfully for me. That made my top 10, of course, and I think it made Luke's number one. It was his number one of the year. And those movies did way more for me. And also, you think of what's that crazy one about the guy who's the telemarketer?
Sorry to bother you.
Yeah, that one. I mean, that's crazy, kooky, not reality, right? And but it uses surreal stuff to explain its themes, and stuff.
Right?
And that worked out really well for us. We love that movie, and I think those work way better than this one. So yeah, but the main thing I got from this movie, though, the one thing that worked is the idea of the house. Where do you belong? That feeling I got from this movie. A couple points throughout the movie. That's cool. Like the idea, you know, Jimmy's in love with his house.
Mm-hmm.
And in love with his, almost like nostalgia love for his childhood, right? When it was
when everything was fine. Yeah,
right.
Different time.
And obviously, when you're a kid, you think everything's fine. But obviously, you know, you're a kid, you don't know what's wrong with everything yet. But yeah, I do get that feeling. I get nostalgic about feeling like a place that's your own. Completely, but I never felt nostalgic about wanting to go back to one of my old houses or anything, because we used to live in a shitty apartment, so, and that's like my first memory. And then, you know what I'm saying, so like,
no,
I don't have that exact feeling, but I understand the feeling of belonging and having a home. That's cool. You want to get spoilers for this movie?
Yeah, we might as well. Okay. I think we have to.
All right, so spoiler for The Last Black Man in San Francisco starting right now.
Hey, if you're going San Francisco, be sure to wear flowers in your hair.
Maybe he's right. What if we shouldn't be here? Who should be here more? Some millionaire?
To leave is not your loss. It's San Francisco.
I don't know how much longer we can keep doing this.
But I'm not leaving. I'm the last one left.
I'm with you, brother.
All right. What do you want to talk about in this place? You want to talk about the other best friend? Danny Glover's
yeah.
A bit more. What do we think of him and his role in the movie? Like, what is he? He's like an observer for me, but...
Montgomery Allen, right? That's who his name
Monty.
Is. Yeah, Monty. He, Yeah, his role is the observer. His role is almost like what's it called? The guy who, the scribe, writing Jimmy Fails' story.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a good way to put it.
He follows Jimmy Fails, and he's the scribe who's telling, he's going to say the story for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he follows Jimmy Fails because for the big reason that he is this unique person in San Francisco. This is a unique black person in San Francisco. He doesn't fit the norm. He comes from, he should fit the norm. That's what's crazy. Is that
yeah, they mentioned that about he how comes he could have been one of those other people from the streets.
Right.
If he had focus on the South.
He comes from them, right? He comes from that. His dad's has issues, obviously, money issues.
He grew up in a home.
Yeah, they mentioned that he grew up homeless, house to house, squatting in places and stuff like that. And he should have been selling drugs to make money or doing all these things that everybody else does. Anything. And he could have been in that. He obviously hung out with a different group and different things. And but it is almost like this house is the thing that kept him from that. This vision of we once had something that no one else had. Or very few of us have.
Or that now is like...
Nobody has, right?
Right.
Unless if you are that upper echelon of people.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? And it's sad. There's a bus scene later that we'll talk about.
The bus thing was really cool. The fact that I have to wait for buses that never come.
Right. Well, no, I'm talking about the bus scene when she's there at the very end.
No, I know that.
Yeah, that is true.
That
also
was the mother, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not the mother. I'm talking about the two girls.
Oh, the two girls. Okay.
Yeah.
The very end.
I'm talking about the very end. Yeah. Sorry, there is multiple bus scenes in this movie. It is a constant.
And that's a real actress' mother, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, interesting.
I heard it in the interview.
Oh, wow. That's cool. So, yeah. So, he... he's there, and he's almost there to make sure that he doesn't stray. That's another big thing. It's like his little brother. Because at first, that's the relationship they almost have. I'm the older brother, and you're my little brother, and you kind of follow me everywhere, and I tell you what to do, and, you know, you do it because we love each other, and we're brothers, and this and that, right? But in reality, they're not related at all. They're just best friends.
Yeah.
Right? So then I guess you can see it also because, you know, if you choose your friends, right?
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, obviously if you want to follow this person or you want to take orders or take whatever you want to, you know, from this person, then that's what you want to do. That's not a bad thing either. So I guess his, Monty's perspective is like, it's almost like, I feel like he's there just to keep him straight and narrow and keep him, keep him from not changing, not losing hope, I guess. Not losing this, this work ethic that we can have, that anybody can have, and you could not have anything to to show for it, and still have a work ethic, have a something going for yourself, you know, something to strive for, goals and stuff like that. That's a big thing because I think, like, especially in, I guess, what they're saying in that community is that they have nothing to really fend for. I mean, specifically in San Francisco, that's why there's so many homeless people, you know? There's nothing for them. There's nothing for me to actually try or put effort into besides myself and just making it through the next day, you know? And it's kind of sad, but... And you have to... And they live far as... They go far as fuck to go into San Francisco.
Right.
It's a trek for them.
Yes.
So it's like... And even then, where they live, where they are, where they're at... It's still obviously hard, and it's not easy where they are.
Yeah, you're right, and it goes with their happiest moments or my favorite parts of the movie.
Which skateboarding scenes.
The middle part, the middle part where they don't get the house,
They get to live in the house. That is good.
And we know. I think of the scene when Jimmy offers Monty any room, right?
Yeah.
And he picks the dining room, which is. That one room in one house is bigger than his place with his dad.
Yeah.
That Jimmy also lived in, right?
Right.
So he chips in for the rent. And that scene is amazing and great. And you think of the way Monty uses the attic to do his one-man show.
Right.
And when the truth comes out for his friend and, like, how he's doing a friend thing by telling him to admit this problem.
Right.
The fact that he... either has been lying or he made himself believe this lie that his great-grandfather or
great-grandfather.
Yeah, great-grandfather built this house, you know. And he's so ardently been saying that to everyone, and everyone believed them, you know. And that goes along with carrying on this fantasy that it belongs to him, that he should earn it. It's his keep. He's taking care of it. He's the house caretaker or something like that.
Right.
You know, and it's unfortunately just not the case. and in this city that is pushing them away and has pushed them away, and not just minorities. And you know, you think of the people who lost the house initially in the, from the beginning of the movie, they also lost it, and it's like it's not fit for anyone unless you like have cheated the system or whatever. That it feels like so unfair. And in a way, they don't put a face to it, except for the realtor, I guess. The realtor is the only person that has a face on it, who is manipulating events of the house to mm-hmm. whatever he wants. Yeah, it's just completely unfair, and it's like this world is being sucked dry, and it starts with these people. It starts with the city of San Francisco. And again, I some of those things I don't 100% understand, because I feel like I have to have lived there or have to have known the place more. Or maybe she just watched more movies about San Francisco. I don't know what.
Well, I mean, I know how San Francisco.
I can only think of The Rock. And
San Francisco has a horrendous homeless problem.
Yeah. I mean, I've only heard about that recently because of this movie.
Yeah.
But before I didn't know that.
I've known about San Francisco has a horrendous I mean, it smells like shit everywhere because they literally just take shits anywhere they want.
Oh, wow.
And it is a big problem. And they don't do... The biggest problem is that there's no middle class. There's no room for middle class there. There's only room for the bottom and the top, because everybody else is the top. Everyone else makes close to six figures a year. If you're not making six figures a year, you almost can't live there.
Yeah.
And even then, even if you are making six figures a year, why are you paying to live there when you can go in outside an hour away or an hour and a half away and commute from there or whatever, and then have something and actually save money?
It's
and
like
actually,
I'm gonna live there for status if you can afford it.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's what it is.
And then, like, you know, you see a constant stream of poor people around you.
It's become an issue where basically, like, here in Chicago, the big difference is I can go and work. I hate to be, I'm not to say it's still work. It would be hard, don't get me wrong, but my wife and I can work minimum wage jobs. I'll probably two jobs each, right? Or a job each, me two jobs and her one, or her two and me one, whatever the case is, and we could make it work in the city.
Yeah.
We could find the place, we could make bills, we could make ends meet. It'd be hard, but we'd be making it, maybe not by ourselves with another family, but we would make it.
Yeah.
Right? And if we want to just do minimum wage, right?
Right.
That's something that's still possible here, right? Possible here. Over there, it's not.
Yeah.
You can't work at Starbucks and that's it, and then live. You can't. You can't work at McDonald's and live. Those places they fucking get shuttled in from a different place. They have to live as far as they go.
Kind of like on that.
And then they rely on transportation that doesn't even work for them.
I forget which Michael Moore documentary about Flint, Michigan. Now the mothers have to travel so far.
Yeah. Well, what's crazy is that this is how bad the public transportation is that bad that you have companies like Apple who have places there, you know, because there's a lot of tech companies who are in San Francisco that have so many of these employees that they'll be like, oh yeah, we'll shuttle you guys, we'll have our own shuttle service,
yeah,
because they know that it's unreliable for that.
Yeah, I mean, but it's the point of keeping with public transportation.
But this is, right, but this is the problem. My biggest problem with I have is that they don't care to put effort into San Francisco to make it what it should be, you know?
Yeah, everyone's just looking out for
So the middle class is hard, because the middle class is your middle management people, your upper management of, like, I am the manager of this restaurant, I am the manager of this, and I barely make ends meet, you know? Yeah. But he makes, like, $80,000 a year or $60,000 a year, you know? $60,000, should I say.
Yeah.
That's making ends meet? That's bare. What are you talking about? That shouldn't be making ends meet, you know? That should be making... You should be able to supply for your family and, you know, with one job and your wife working one job, not you having to hustle your ass off and do Uber at the end of the day
because
you have to, you know, to make extra money, supplement your income.
Right.
So it does suck.
Yeah. That bus thing really got to me specifically because I believe 2 weeks ago or so, Hasan Minhaj's show Patriot Act had
I've been meaning to watch that show.
He did a thing on public transportation. And why, you know, you think of the Koch brothers, he goes into them a lot, about how it's failing in a lot of places. He doesn't specifically talk about San Francisco, but he talks about a lot of places, like, dropping the ball on that because it's a lot of people, rich people, the people who control the system, whatever, are forcing Americans to drive rather than use public transportation. Right. And the people who get hurt are the people who can't afford a car.
Right.
And the minorities who have to use a bus.
Right.
And are not reliable.
Well, they don't care about them.
Yeah, of course.
100% they don't. Yeah.
It goes hand in hand with this, I'm saying.
It does.
So, yeah, that part.
That's why when you live in a city, like, and I hate to bring back, but you live in a city like Chicago, and as much as I hate it for the taxes and for the this and for the that, I mean, in the end, they still focus on things like that. The grip is slipping more and more, right?
Right.
But it's still there. You know, there's still that possibility of you being able
this
to make
close of taxing us for the oxygen we breathe.
I mean,
they're that close.
They were this close of taxing us for the drive, the mileage we were putting into our car. You know that?
Oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
We were about to get taxed for like how much you drive.
It's insane.
Get the fuck out of here.
That's
like,
so
go fuck yourself. Like, right.
I can't believe that.
I know.
It's still, I mean, the gas thing is already.
The gas thing, they did it dirty because, and they hoodwinked us on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a different story. Anyways.
Yeah, that's a different story. Anyway.
Yeah, but that bus situation. So the second bus, you know what, the bus situation that was the most fucked up though, I think was when he, not with his mom, because the mom is just a personal thing. I'm just in general, the bus situation is when the homeless guy comes in who's naked. Mm-hmm. And they're both just like, and the guy, even the naked guy goes like, man, these buses take forever or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and you're like, yeah. And then you see a party bus.
Yeah.
Right. And they all take pictures or rock out to this guy with his cock out. Right.
Yeah.
Or whatever the hell they say to the guy. This guy fucks or something. Right. I forget what they say. They chant. And they have their own private bus because that's what they can
clearly
do.
The 1%.
They're clearly the 1%. Right. Yeah. And you're just like, well, that's fucked up.
Yeah, no, I know. That scene is great because it shows you the ridiculousness. Like, the most ridiculous thing here is not that this guy's naked in broad daylight. It's the fact that this disparaging is happening. Disparity between these two classes, clearly, on a daily basis.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's the ridiculous. So, yeah. Yeah, no. Like, that stuff really worked, man. And I get it. And I get why other people, you know, got impacted by that more than I did even. But well, this movie kind of didn't work for me. And maybe it's a lot of it with the pacing of what it's showing me and the way it's showing me.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it leads to the end, too. Ultimately felt like I couldn't connect 100% there with it. And I didn't connect the way that, like I said, more black cinema recently has really connected with me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard to compare everything to Get Out and Black Panther. I know I shouldn't, but they're there. They just came out, man.
No, I understand.
Or even us, right?
But, yeah. But, you know, what's funny is that I do agree with you with the whole... like him lying to himself that he did, that he needed like this.
It's like he did what he had to, including lying to himself to get out of the self-centeredness of being another statistic.
Right. It was like a self-defense mechanism. Like his body.
Totally. Yeah.
Right. It's like your body, when you have a trauma, it erases it, or not erases it, but it like blocks it from you, you know? It's there and you have to eventually tap back into it or something once you have a trauma at a young age or whatever.
Yeah.
Your mind protects yourself. And it's like, we don't want to feel that. We don't need to whatever. Yeah, and we need to get away from that, you know?
Definitely.
So it needs you to grow and it needs you to move. And that's funny because I think... but I also think that's another purpose for his first friend, Montgomery. He's there to kind of, you know, after giving him that whole like, hey, like, you know, like... you need to snap out of the fact that this isn't your place.
Yeah.
Come to the realization. He's like, yeah, I know. And he goes... you need to know that in the end, like, you can make something here. I'm there. Like, you've made something here with me already, you know? And that's...
it's kind of an elaborate home is where your heart is kind of feel.
It is. Right? Yeah. Kind of, I would say
it is.
They
don't say that, thank God, but like...
no, they don't say that. But at the same time, it's like, it is like this cool brotherhood that they have.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I also like how they respect each other's boundaries. Like, oh, I'll be back tomorrow.
Right, yeah.
It's really cool, really nice. They don't have to stick together.
You know? No, they don't.
It's good. Yeah. I think that's it for a review of. I should get something else. I'm sure there's more we can.
Oh,
on Jot, but I don't know.
Yeah. Oh well, I was gonna say that whole disparity scene.
Mm-hmm.
With the girls who are complaining.
Oh yeah, you're talking about the
girls who complain in the bus, and I hate to bring the buses back up, but the girls, they're like, oh, I hate San Francisco. Like, I like it, but like I hate it because it's like, ugh, like, you know, whatever, and they're just complaining, and it's like they're obviously the top. If not, they're up on their way to be the top percent or whatever they're going to be, right? And they're complaining about a place that they get to live in, right? That they get to live in, but they're pissed about all the people who can't live there anymore, about all this disparity, about all this crazy stuff, but they just want to turn a blind eye to it. They're mad about how nothing works for them.
Right there.
It's a big thing, and you're like, you just got here, and you're here taking jobs from everybody else, or the reason you're here is... X, Y, and Z, and you're fucking us over, but you're complaining. Like, you don't get to complain in a place you don't even love.
Right.
He's like, and it's such a powerful scene because we just got through him obviously loving this, his memories in this house and in San Francisco and in this and that and all these things that just happened in the movie. And then him saying that scene's a lot more powerful. I wish it was more powerful to me during the moment, during the first viewing, but it just wasn't as powerful as it needed to be.
No.
But it was, especially towards the end. Yeah. Or not towards the end, I'm talking about like after a couple days, just like thinking back and going through the movie, and you're just like, it is fucked up, like when you're watching it, but I just more and more you think about it, you're like, it's fucked up. It's like, it just, angers you.
The balls to say that shit, like, right. It's insane.
The balls to say that, it just, the ignorance, the level of ignorance to say it in public.
And also, I feel like Chicago is one of those places where we wouldn't let anyone say that out loud, really.
Somebody would have checked them so fast.
Yes.
Somebody would have been like, what'd you say?
Like, what? Like, you, I, because we've lived here. We can complain about our city. We fucking were born here.
Right.
So you, but other outsiders can't.
Right.
Yeah, you can't fucking say that shit. You don't know shit. If you, yeah.
So. Yeah, no, somebody, you know what? Somebody would have checked them. I think New York would have been the same thing.
Yeah,
New York would have got checked, I think, a lot harsher. Here, somebody would have been like, you should shut up.
Yeah.
You know, that's like our nice Midwestern thing.
Kind of. Like, you can. Depends on where you are.
Depends on where you are.
Yeah,
for sure.
Depends on where you are. What bus.
Line. Yeah, if you're on the red line, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Right, yeah, basically. Yeah. All right. The yellow line, you're fine. All right. I was going to mention one more thing. And it's gone. I had it when you were talking about the girls.
The level of ignorance.
That's okay. I think it's gone. That's okay. Not a big deal. But that is The Last Black Man in San Francisco. And I believe that is it for our show. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. Don't forget to send us some love on iTunes. That would be a great way to show appreciation to our show and have other people find it. Not to mention, our website, sorry, which is otherpodcast.com. Check it out for everything we do there. We come back every other weekend. So next time, I forgot to do our thing. You can follow me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph?
You can follow me on Twitter at Gamer Ralph. That's with two R's and an F.
Right. So now, next time, what movies did I pick?
I don't know at all.
Oh, it's because I wrote it on the website, because I'm an idiot.
I'll fill it in.
Got it. Sorry. I just have to go to our actual website now, because I wrote it on there. So one of them is a movie that's only available on Shudder right now, and it's called Hagazusa. It's a German horror film that came out this year, earlier in the year. And we'll also be reviewing a documentary called Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Yeah, Hail Satan. And then the movie that's going to be the new release movie is going to be It Chapter 2. So I figure I went with a horror theme.
My wife's going to hate me.
Really satanically demon horror theme.
Nice.
I think all those three movies have that in common. I figured I saw a pattern, so I went with it.
Cool.
So that's until next time. Until then, I am Oscar.
And I'm Ralph.
Later.